The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to Sports Talk New York on WGBB here in Merrick, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue here. It is the 24th day of March, 2024, in case you're just waking up. Our engineer Brian Graves is with us, ever vigilant, ever faithful, taking care of all things technical, and he's right away over here taking care of business. Up first tonight, we will welcome in really a baseball lifer, the former manager of the New York Mets, Terry Collins, will join us. And in the second half, we will speak to former Mets and Red Sox pitcher. He is an integral part of the famous Game 6 of the 1986 World Series. Calvin Schiraldi will speak to us. So we got some great stuff up ahead. So settle back, give a listen. As always, before I begin, I invite you to follow us on social media. We have a Facebook page. I have a Facebook page called The Talk of New York Sports. You'll find show information, sports information, some great photos. Check that out. You can follow me on X, which is the platform formerly known as Twitter. Not something illicit, so don't go looking there. Follow me on X at B Donahue WGBB. And if you miss a show, don't you worry, because they're all out on the website the next day, and you can listen to them anytime at your leisure. Well, our first guest, he managed the Houston Astros, the Anaheim Angels, and, of course, the New York Mets. He led them to their first playoff appearances in 9 years in 2015. Of course, we remember that resulted in a trip to the 2015 World Series, the Mets' first pennant since 2000. It's not like they come around every year, folks. So this is some good stuff. We welcome many people to our air here at WGBB, but I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a better guy than Terry Collins. Terry, welcome aboard.
Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
We're doing great here, Terry, and I hope the same is happening by you.
Yeah, it's a little nicer down here. We had some sunshine today and 78 degrees, so I'm sure it's a little nicer than it is up there.
Of course. And we had a nice ball game, too, to wrap up the Grapefruit League schedule. So,
yes, we did.
And we're looking forward to the start of the season. I want to ask you, Terry, growing up in Michigan, who were your sports heroes and icons when you were younger?
Well, you know, growing up, I mean, I was a lifelong baseball fan, and, you know, living in Michigan back then before television had a lot of games, you know, the Detroit Tigers were the main team, and Al Kaline was my favorite player, I mean, of always. But, you know, we always, back when I was a kid, you know, the Yankees were winning like crazy, and, mm-hmm. you know, as we were out on the playgrounds, everybody wanted to be Mickey Mantle, so... I would have to say those two guys, you know, were probably two of my favorites growing up, and wanted to be like them. And fortunately, in my career, I got a chance to meet them both and enjoyed every minute that I had with them. And it was conversation, so it was great.
Great gentleman that you mentioned there, Terry. I remember the first time I pulled a Mickey Mantle card out of a nickel pack of Topps cards. And still, I have the same feeling thinking about that years ago. You played high school ball. I read with a guy who really doesn't get the credit he deserves. He's a three-time All-Star, and really for like a 3 to 4 year stretch, he was the best reliever in baseball. And that I'm talking of Jim Kern.
Yeah, you know, we played. Jim and I played. Well, we played for a long time together, and you know, Midland, Michigan's a fairly small town, and you know, Jim was a great big tall guy, and you know, really struggled with his command for a long time, and went to a Pittsburgh Pirate camp they had at a university in Michigan in Midland, and they worked with Jim really hard and got him to be able to throw the ball over the plate, and he became like right out of nowhere one of the best pitchers in the entire state of Michigan. And we won the state championship with Jim Kern and a guy named Dick Lang, who also pitched in the big leagues for a while. And So, you know, we were very, very lucky. But Jimmy Kern, one of my real good friends, and I still get a chance to see him once in a while today when I get to Texas.
Yeah, nice. Like I said, Terry, he does not get the credit he deserves. People really forget about Jim Kern, but he was a viable all-star there for a while. Now, at Eastern Michigan University, Terry, you played shortstop on the ball club there. You were known for your proficiency in stealing bases. Now, did you bring that to your coaching and your managing, the theories that you put in play while stealing bases?
Well, you know, Bill, I will tell you, I've always been a huge believer in running the bases. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, it's you got to score runs to win. And I think, you know, good base running is very, very essential. And, you know, in my career, I talked about, you know, being aggressive on the bases. And, you know, when I went to the Houston Astros, I was, you know, hanging around Jeff Bagwell, watching Jeff Bagwell play. And, when you know, 1 year, Jeff Bagwell stole 31 bases as a first baseman right after, you know, and this guy was an MVP, the home run hitter. Mm-hmm. But yet he was such a good baseball, so good on the bases. He went first to third. He could steal second base. And so it just creates runs for the entire club. I mean, you look up, if you're a hitter behind Jeff Bagwell, and you look up and he's standing at second base, I mean, it's pretty nice to drive in those runs.
Exactly. No, good point. I see that, Terry. Now you played and managed for Albuquerque, the Albuquerque Dodgers, the Dukes. That town, not only known for the birthplace of Ethel Mertz on Lucy, but also for its rich baseball history. And you're in the Albuquerque Baseball Hall of Fame.
I am. I was lucky. I had really good players. I mean, the Dodgers, one of the, you know, the greatest organizations in baseball. And, you know, I have to give them credit. I, you know, Bill, I would not be anywhere close to what my career was without the Los Angeles Dodgers. The minor league director's name was Bill Schweppe, and Bill, you know, liked what I did and the way I played and stayed with me forever, got my first chance to manage in the minor leagues. And so, I played 6 years in Albuquerque and managed 6 years in Albuquerque. So, you know, I became very familiar with the town, the history of all the great baseball players that came through there. And I mean, you're talking about Lasorda and, you know, and all those mm-hmm. great teams that he had there, Del Crandall, and, you know, all, you know, they ran through numerous major league players there. So I loved it there, and we put out some pretty good teams. But, yeah, for sure it was one of the great baseball towns and synonymous with Los Angeles Dodger baseball.
Yeah, and, folks, you can look it up. Guys like Buckner came through there. Billy Grabarkiewicz, there's a name. Just a host. The Dodgers had a Rookie of the Year, it seemed, almost every year, and all these guys came through Albuquerque. So check out Albuquerque Baseball. You'll find a lot of good stuff there. We're speaking with the great Terry Collins tonight on Sports Talk New York. Now, you were described as being edgy during your stint in Houston, Terry, and you had a talk with Tony Phillips, who was with the California Angels, I believe, and he helped you hone your skills a little bit.
Well, you know, Bill, I will tell you, you know, I'm not a very big guy, and so I had to play the game harder than anybody else. So there was never a game in my entire minor league career where, you know, I left the game saying, geez, I wish you would have hustled on this ball or that ball. That
right.
never happened. That's all I knew. All I knew was you had to play the game one way. And so when I got my first managing job, I was told when I was coming up as a manager, Walter Alston told me, you know, players take on the personality of the managers. Well, I'm an intense guy. I played hard, and I wanted my players to be similar to me. And some, you know, some guys bought into it, some guys didn't. And for me, it was tough because I thought the game deserved respect. I mean, where would any of us be without baseball today?
Mm-hmm.
And so I always thought, you know what, Layla, you owe the game your maximum effort. So, you know, there were times some guys didn't give it. And so, yeah, I had something to say about it. So when after my stint in Houston, I went to Anaheim, and that's where I met Tony Phillips. And he's the one who said, you know, you got to start enjoying the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said, everybody's different. Every player's different. You know, as a manager, you've got to be able to blend that who they are with, you know, with your lineup and understand there are certain guys you got to pat on the back and certain guys you got to kick in the ass. And you can't be both. I mean,
right.
you can't be just one way. And he taught me a lot. He was really, really good. Tony was a really intense guy himself. But he said, you know, he'd played with guys that, you know, the intenseness wore them down. I mean, they were always on edge. And so when I finally got my chance in New York, I said, you know, I'm going to change the way I am. I'm going to enjoy the game, enjoy the job, because they're hard to get. And I did that. And I changed the way I approached the players and got the players more involved in some of the decision-making things that go on with the ball club. And I think it worked out to our advantage in New York. And obviously we put some really good teams on the field.
Right. I agree with you 100%, Terry, what you said about your theory of managing and what you brought with you to the Mets. Obviously you got the results. Now, you wore number 10 here for the Mets, Terry. And, of course, who did you wear that number 10 in honor of?
Well, I wore it in honor of Jim Leland. I mean, I got my chance. You know, Jim and I had very similar backgrounds. Jim Leland grew up in the Tiger organization, and, you know, he had a chance to go to the major leagues with the Chicago White Sox and did not want to leave the Tigers and basically asked Sparky Anderson, hey, look, I'll take any job you got, but I want to stay a Tiger. And Sparky said, I don't have anything here, so Jim left. And went to the White Sox and ultimately, of course, became a great Hall of Fame manager. But it was very similar. I was behind Tommy Lasorda in the Dodger organization. I was stuck in Albuquerque and, you know, I'd been there 6 years and knowing that Tommy was going to be the manager forever. And I had a chance to leave and go to the Pittsburgh Pirates where I met Jim Leland and we became very, very good friends. And I took his mentorship, to heart, learned a lot of things from him, and, fortunately, my first chance is when Gene Lamont, who was his third base coach, got the job with the White Sox, and Jim called me the next day and said, we're going to bring you up, and you're going to be on the coaching staff, and that's how I got my shot in the big leagues.
Nice. Now, does this mean we're going to see you walking down Main Street in Cooperstown this summer, Terry?
Well, you will. You will,
yeah,
for sure.
Okay.
I'll be there for Jim. I wouldn't miss it for anything, and I can't wait to get there, and I can't wait to see him. You know, give a speech. I know it's going to be emotional at the time when he gives it, but he's absolutely one of the greatest people I've ever been around, and I'm anxious to get there and hear what he has to say.
Yeah, it's a good weekend, Terry. I equate it as Woodstock for baseball. The way people camp out and sit out in the field and listen to the speeches of the immortals and all the guys sitting on stage, it's really awesome, and I think you're going to enjoy it.
I'm sure I will.
Now, I want to ask you about 2015, Terry, a couple of questions about that. What has become known as the Wilmer Flores night? What was the dugout like that night, Terry? You must have had a hard time maintaining control over these guys.
Well, first of all, Bill, I got to tell you, you know, when the game was going on, I was wrapped up in the game, and Wilmer was going, he walked out of the dugout once. I don't remember what inning it was, and he walked in the on-deck circle, and people would come down and say, hey, Wilmer, good luck, we love you, and,
oh,
you know, all the best. And I'm thinking, what the hell are they talking about? So then David Wright walked up to me, and he said, Terry, it's all over TV that Wilmer's been traded. I said, David, he has not been traded. He said, well, they're not. It's already been announced on TV that he's been traded. I said, David, this man has not been traded. He said, I'm just telling you, they're announcing. I said, well, you see that phone? It was their phone right behind me. I said, that phone goes to Sandy Alderson. And if Wilmer Flores has been traded, that phone will ring and say, get him out of the game because he's no longer our property.
Right.
I said, this guy has not been traded. So, and the people are cheering for Wilmer. And so he went out and, you know, went out the next inning. And so he, you know, all of a sudden he gets emotional on the field and he comes off the field. And I said, Wilmer, you got to get a hold of yourself. You're not going anywhere. I said, I have not been told, and if you're traded, I would have been told. I don't care what they're saying on TV, but you haven't been traded. So, sure enough, he goes out the next inning to shortstop, and now the phone rings behind me, and I grabbed it, and it's Sandy, and he said, Terry, you got to get him off the field. And I said, did you trade him? He goes, no, but he's out there crying. We got to get him off the field before something happens.
Yeah.
So,
even when the game
was over, I grabbed it, gave him a big hug. I said, pal, you're not going anywhere. And sure enough, when the game was over, he walked up the runway, and there was Sandy and Jeff Wilpon, and told him, they said, listen, the deal did not go through. You have not been traded. You're a New York Met. And, of course, 2 days later hits that big home run to start us on our way to the World Series.
Yeah, it's a magic story. It really is, Terry, and I'm glad you could relate that to us. Now, have you ever seen someone so in the zone as Daniel Murphy was in the playoffs?
I have not, ever, and I don't think anybody else is going to ever see something like that either. And I give a lot of credit. I give most of my first to Dan because he adjusted his swing. But, you know, our hitting coaches did some research on Dan, and they called him in near late in the season. Now, Dan Murphy could hit, as you know, Bill.
Right.
He could always hit.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, you know, the one thing about Dan, he sprayed the ball all over the field and hit different pitches. And they called him in, and they said, hey, look, we looked up some numbers, and when you hit the ball in the air, here's what your numbers are, and they were outstanding. And he said, when you hit the ball on the ground, here's your numbers. And they weren't that good. So Dan said, well, I guess I better start hitting the ball in the air. And they said, yeah. And sure enough, he walked out 2 days later and hit, you know, and again, had the ability because he had great bat-to-ball skills that he got started getting the ball in the air. And he put on an exhibition in the playoffs. I mean, to the point where guys were looking at each other in the bullpen or in the dugout saying, who is this guy? I mean, for heaven, we all knew he was a good hitter, but the display of power was off the charts, and obviously that led to a really great career for Dan.
And a great postseason, that's for sure. Now, what gut-wrenching decisions and thoughts were going through your mind during the Johan Santana no-hitter, Terry? That's got to be rough.
That was really a tough one, Bill. You know, Johan was coming off an injury, and we knew it, and I knew his value to the club. And so when the game started, I thought, okay, you know, if he gives us six, seven innings, that'd be great. If we got to take him out early, we do. Well, sure enough, he gets through the fifth inning, and there's no hits. And I'm thinking, well, somebody's going to get a hit here. He doesn't have that many more pitches left in what I felt was going to be his, you know, pitch count for that night. And sure enough, he gets up through the sixth inning and seventh inning. I walked down to him at the end of the bench. I said, are you okay? He goes, yeah, I'm fine. So I said, okay, man. I said, listen, you know, you're getting up there in pitch counts. So he said, Terry, I'm fine. So sure enough, in the seventh inning, he goes out and gets him out again. I walked down there in the eighth inning. And before I say anything, he said, listen, I'm fine. Relax.
Yeah.
I'm going to be okay. Of course, I had somebody warming up on every pitch. And that's when I turned to him and I said, you know, you're my hero. And let him go back out there in the ninth inning. And sure enough, he pitches a no-hitter. And to this day, we talk about it. And, it tore me up because I knew how important he was to the club. And I knew he was coming off an injury. But he deserved that opportunity, Bill. This guy is one of the classiest professionals you've ever been around in your life. And obviously, in the pitching-rich history of the New York Mets, nobody had ever pitched a no-hitter. And if anybody that I've ever been around deserved that opportunity more, I couldn't give you his name because Johan Santa was that guy who deserved that chance. And I'm so happy for him that he got it. But, yeah, it tore me up.
Another magic moment, folks, that involved Terry Collins. I have to ask you, Terry, about the play that made you a social media superstar. And everybody in the world, everybody in the stadium, the guy selling hot dogs in Section 117, everybody knew that we were going to plunk Utley. Did it come to such a big surprise to the home plate umpire? I know Tom Hallion was the guy you had the great conversation with, but they came out, they knew the history, they didn't warn any bench. They didn't say anything. And all of a sudden, Noah throws behind Utley. He didn't really come close to him. And right away, they toss him with no warning.
Yeah, that was tough. I mean, yeah, Bill, you don't need to, before a game, in a situation like that, call your pitcher over and say, hey, look, I want you to drill this guy. Everybody was there that knew that was going to happen. I mean,
right.
You know, Noah was the perfect guy to have on the mound. And so I really thought, you know, after we both got ejected, I went inside. I said, really, you couldn't hit this guy in the middle of his back? I mean, you're a big pitcher with great command.
Come on.
But, yeah, and that was my whole point when I was said, you know, we did, you got to allow us a shot to get this guy. And, of course, Tom said, you had your shot. Well, we never did because, you know, after he broke Tejada's leg, we didn't see this guy until the next, till 2016. So, yeah, we knew it was coming. And I wasn't, you know, the thing that got out online, which should have never got out there, but they everybody reacts like I was mad at the umpire. I wasn't mad at the umpires. I mean, they had a job to do. I was a little surprised that the home plate umpire didn't let it go and like walk out and give warnings.
Right.
But, you know, I just thought, hey, look, this is our chance to do something. So I was more I was more upset about the fact that we were given that opportunity because, yeah, these umpires, they know what's going on. They're well aware of the past. So that's what bothered me more than anything. And so, but, you know, I had absolutely no hard feelings towards Tom Hallion at all. He's not the guy who threw Noah out of the game. He was just, you know, doing what he thought was right or his crew. And so, you know, we moved on from it, but yeah, it went crazy. And you know, Bill, it's pretty funny. And I know it's been something that's followed me wherever I've gone ever since it happened. But, you know, you kind of look back and say, gosh, I wish I'd have been told this was going to get out there, you know,
because,
it was sprung on me like everybody else. And, you know, I'm getting phone calls from people and I hadn't even seen the thing because it was 4 years after it happened. And, and I look back and, you know, I don't regret what I did. And, you know, I was, I'm, like you said, I'm an emotional guy. I'm an intense guy. And, you know, and this is my team and I'm going to protect my players. So I did what I had to do, what I thought was right. And I had moved on from it.
Famous people who've said that, like Richard Nixon, Pamela Anderson, gee, I wish that wouldn't have got out. You know, so many of us, right, Terry, can say that.
That's right.
Damn.
That's right. That's a pretty exclusive crowd I'm in. So,
yeah.
But, yeah. It's, you know, Bill, I don't meet anybody. I mean, I'm down here in Florida, and I play a lot of golf, and someone will come up to me, and they'll say, you know, hey, oh, gosh, I've always wanted to meet you because I saw that video of you, and I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. You know, here we go again.
Yeah.
So. But it is what it is, and, you know, again, I just nod my head and thank them for coming on and introducing themselves and move on.
Glad they remember you, Terry. That's a good thing.
Exactly.
Now, what do you think is going to happen with Pete Alonso?
Well, you know, I believe this. I believe Pete's going to do another Pete Alonso season. I think he's going to hit 40-some home runs. I believe he's going to drive in 125 runs, and especially now that he's got JD hitting behind him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to get some balls to hit. I think he's going to have a big year, but I also am pretty good friends with Scott Boras, and I know Scott is going to maximize this guy's value, and they're probably going to hit that free agent market. I believe the Mets are going to do the best they can to bring him back. I know Pete wants to play in New York, and I think that's ultimately going to be a huge part of his decision because I know he loves New York and he loves the fans and the ballpark and the organization. So, but I think this guy's going to have a huge year. So it's going to take a lot of money to bring him back.
It sure is. How should fans view the assignment of Mark Vientos, Terry? Is that signaling the end for Mark or is he just going to get some at bats?
He's going to go get some at bats.
Okay.
You know, Bill, you can't have young players. And of course, all my years, you know, in the minor leagues I would get players. I had a pitcher one time that pitched for me in Albuquerque. He went to the big leagues, pitched a two-hitter, and came back the next day. And he said, what did I have to do to say? And I said, you don't have to do anything except you were supposed to go up there and pitch one game. But the point is, they've got to keep you, you know, lengthened out. You're not going to go sit on the bench or sit in the bullpen and not get action because you're the prospect.
Right.
And I think Mark has to realize, look, with the addition of JD Martinez, his chances of getting at bats are going to be diminished. And he's a young prospect. He's got to go play. That's part of the game. And, you know, I go back to one time, you know, a few years ago after I left managing, Pete Alonso had a tremendous season, and he didn't get a September call-up, and he was really upset. And I talked to him. We were out at City Field, and I said, Pete, it happens to everybody, all you guys, young guys. They don't have to bring you up in certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to start the clock on your time in the big leagues unless they really have to. Well, the next year, they didn't have to keep him, and sure enough, he was the starting first baseman. So it happens to guys. Now, Mark Vientos has one decision to make. I go down, and I show them I belong back in the big leagues. That's the decision he has to make. Mm-hmm. You have to show them they made a mistake. If you go down and you feel sorry for yourself and you're ticked off and you're upset and you get off to a bad start, well, then they made the right decision. You know? What's your job? His job is right now to say, hey, look, I belong in the big leagues, and I'm going to show you I belong in the big leagues, and go start tearing it up in AAA.
Exactly. Great point, Terry. Now, if you had the choice of taking one player to fill out your entire roster, one guy, a team full of one guy, who would that be?
Oh, my God. That is really a tough decision. Well, you know, I was a middle infielder, so, you know, I'm a big believer in middle infielders and the importance of them. You know, obviously, your center fielders are really, really important. But this game has always been about pitching. It's always been and always will be about pitching. So, you know, right now with what I've seen in the last couple of years, I tell you, Garrett Cole's got to be right at the top of your list of a guy that, you know, hey, look, you want him. I would have said Jake DeGrom. Unfortunately, Jake or Max Scherzer, but, you know, they're both hurt at the moment. So, and along with Garrett.
Yeah.
But that, you know, if you give me that guy that goes out there every 5 days and gives you a tremendous outing and gives you a chance to win, that's how you win in the big leagues.
Final question, Terry. If you were still playing, what would be your walk-up music to home plate?
God. Well, you got to remember how old I am. So it'd probably be a Beach Boys song or something. You know,
okay, that's good.
But, yeah.
Yeah. All right, no problem. Yeah. Terry, it's been an honor and a pleasure. I thank you for taking time out of your Sunday evening to spend with some of us out here on Long Island. We wish you the very best for 2024, and you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me on. Call me anytime.
Will do. That's Terry Collins, ladies and gentlemen. Up next on Sports Talk New York, we will welcome in former Met and Red Sox pitcher Calvin Schiraldi. Stay with us, folks.
You're listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are back with Sports Talk New York tonight on WGBB in beautiful downtown Merrick, Long Island. We're about a block away from the Long Island Railroad Station. Sometimes you could see the disgruntled look on the people on the people's faces that ride by. They mustn't be going to such a cheerful place. They should stop by here, right, Brian? Because it's a veritable party here that we have every Sunday night. I thank you for stopping by and hanging with us on a beautiful spring Sunday evening here on Long Island. I'm back. I was in the hospital for a while. I had surgery on my spine. I had a spinal decompression and fusion on my cervical spine, which is starting from the back of the neck down. But the only trick is they went in through the front way. So I look like I met OJ these days because I got a big slice in the front of my neck. But it wasn't easy, but it was pretty much successful. And I'm back on the air with you guys. But I bet you I could compare notes about spinal stenosis with David Wright if we could ever get him back on the show, because he's one that I know has gone through the stenosis route and had some success. Well, he's back anyway. He was in Port St. Lucie with the club. And, of course, the Grapefruit League came to an end today with the Mets defeating the Washington Nationals. Mr. Finnegan, Kyle Finnegan, pitched for Washington with his West Islip roots. And just sorry to see the Grapefruit League go, because it's such a great time to go to spring training baseball. Everybody's more relaxed. You have easier access to everybody. And if you ever get a chance, it's just a wonderful experience. Whether you go to the West Coast to see the Yankees, or if you head down towards Fort Lauderdale way to see the Mets at Port St. Lucie. It is just a great experience, and I think everybody should do it once if you're a baseball fan. Well, our next guest, he played baseball at Westlake High School and was also at the University of Texas, Hook'em Horns. He made it to the bigs pitching for the Mets, the Red Sox, the Cubs, and the Padres. Following his professional career, he has coached high school baseball for 22 years. He's now retired, and he speaks to audiences about his life's journey. He has a new book out, folks. It's titled The Arena, The True Story of One Man's Search for Excellence and the Price He Paid for Daring to Achieve It. I welcome to the show tonight Calvin Schiraldi. Calvin, good evening.
How are you doing, sir?
Doing fine, doing fine. I hope everything's good down in the Lone Star State.
Outstanding.
Now, you grew up in Texas, of course, Calvin. Who were your sports heroes down there when you were a kid?
I would say Nolan Ryan.
Mm-hmm. From Alvin, Texas. Yep.
And Moses Malone.
Wow. Okay.
I was a huge basketball fan growing up.
Yeah, Moses was a great one.
I love the way he played basketball.
Yeah, a Hall of Famer, definitely. Moses Malone, good one, Calvin. Now, your senior year at Texas, you were drafted by the Chicago White Sox. Oh, no, your senior year in high school, excuse me. You were drafted by the White Sox, but you opted to attend Texas. Why was that? Why didn't you go to the major leagues then, Calvin?
Well, the scout that drafted me, I actually pitched against in the playoffs my senior year, and he came up and told me, he said, look, we're not going to offer you enough money, and I knew I'd already had a full ride to the University of Texas, and so it was really a very easy decision to make.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. Now, as the Longhorns looked as though they might repeat in 1982, you had a bad experience, which happens to many people along the way. You accidentally hit a Wichita State player by the name of Kevin Penner below the eye with your 90-mile-an-hour fastball. But this had a profound effect upon you, Calvin, didn't it?
I would say so, yeah. Mm-hmm. It kind of shook me up a little bit, knowing that it wasn't intentional, but, you know, when something like that happens and the sound that it makes and seeing the player down like that, it shook me up for a while. And so therefore, I mean, not therefore, but so it just, you know, it took a while to recover. Once I found out that he was okay, I think that's when I started to piece things together and get things back in order and move on. It just took a while to move on.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, especially when somebody's down like that. We've had experiences like that in the past. I remember when I was a kid, there was a ball player with the Boston Red Sox named Tony Canigliaro, who had a brilliant career ahead of him, and he was hit in the face by Jack Hamilton of the California Angels, and he never was the same again. So I can see something like that affecting you greatly. Now, your major league debut, do you remember that, Calvin?
I do. It was in New York. It was the second game of a doubleheader behind Doc, and it was against San Diego, and it didn't go very well. I think I lasted in 2 1/3 innings and came out losing, but we ended up coming back and winning that game.
That's all that matters. But yeah, I can see how that could bug you too. Now, later on, you got your first win. I believe it was a six hitter. You pitched six innings, and Roger McDowell came in, and you earned your first major league victory.
That could be true. I don't remember that. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, I know. But believe me, that happened, because it's on the Internet. If it's on the Internet, it's true. Now, you and your lovely wife, Deborah, honeymooned in Bermuda. So did my wife and I. Where did you stay in Bermuda, Calvin? Do you remember?
We were actually in Jamaica.
Oh, all right. So Sabre is wrong.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
That's where I got the news that I'd been traded.
Quite a ways from Bermuda, too. I'm going to write a note to these people. That's terrible. Now, yeah, that's where you got the news that you were traded to Boston. How did you feel about it?
I wasn't really sure, but then I realized that you know, it may not be a bad thing. Because the Mets had so much talent coming up, and I just figured that it would give me an opportunity to be able to stay in the major leagues. That's the way I looked at it, and that's the way I approached it.
Good way to approach it, Calvin. Yes, Calvin Schiraldi is with us tonight on Sports Talk New York. Between starting and working out of the pen, which did you prefer, Calvin?
Oh, man, I think I actually enjoyed starting more. I liked the days off in between outings, and because relieving, I mean, you've got to be ready every single day, and you don't really get a chance to relax. The only good thing about relieving is the fact that if you make a mistake, then you've got the next day to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
As a starter, if you screw up, then you've got 5 days to wait until your next outing.
Right. Good point. Yeah, definitely. I can see that, starting versus relieving. Facing adversity now, we'll talk a little bit about 1986. How did you feel you did in the ALCS versus the Angels, Calvin?
I thought it went pretty well. Mm-hmm. The one thing was the game four when I threw a pitch I should have never thrown, and that ended up costing us the game. Because I know Getty put down fastball, and I shook off thinking I'm going to throw the world's greatest curveball 0-2, and ended up hitting Brian Downing to tie the game, and then of course we ended up losing in extra innings. But overall, I thought I threw the ball well.
Yeah.
During that series.
Now, talking about facing adversity, as we will and we do in this segment of the show. Donnie Moore, that name comes up in the history of Major League Baseball. There was a guy who didn't pitch well for the Angels. Really, probably was the reason they lost the series to the Boston Red Sox. And he ended up shooting his wife and killing himself. And just one of the horror stories that you hear in Major League Baseball. Not good dealing with adversity, but it gives you the idea of what can go through a person's mind. Now, Game 6, take us through Game 6 on October 25th, 1986. You come in the bottom of the eighth after Clemens was pulled. Mike Greenwell hit for them. First of all, I want to ask you, was there any controversy about Roger coming out or staying in?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I didn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the bullpen warming up, so
right.
I didn't know. I didn't hear about that until after the game, after the game was over with. So I didn't know anything about what was going on. I mean, I was focused on trying to get the outs that we needed to win. So that's where my focus was at that particular time.
And as well, it should be right. So as people know, and you it's greatly chronicled. There's been books written about one inning in Major League Baseball history. Bob Stanley ends up coming in after you, and he really pours gasoline on the fire. It wasn't a solid hit, but Mookie comes up and hits that famous ground ball that rolls through the legs of Billy Buckner, who doesn't get the credit he deserves because he's a borderline Hall of Famer, in my opinion, because the guy's got over 2,700 base hits, and that's a lot for a baseball player.
Yeah.
Now, do you feel that Boston has forgotten about Billy? I know, Billy, they forgave. How are you greeted in Boston these days, Calvin, or you stay away from it?
I haven't been back.
Yeah.
I went back for the 30th and everything was fine. I mean, the part that gets me a little bit is, I talk about it in the book, is people want to give want to make everybody make there be a scapegoat instead of the fact of relishing a great game that the Mets came out on top. Everybody wants to say that the Red Sox choked, that I choked, that whoever didn't perform. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, you got to give the Mets credit. I was talking to a buddy of mine today, and he's talking about there were 17 pitches that could have ended the series. So there's 17 pitches that were fouled off that, you know, just like, you know, for instance, Mookie, I think, had 8 of them that, you know, he fouled off 8 balls mm-hmm. to stay alive in the at-bat. You know, it's errors happen in the game, and it's a part of the game. It's not everybody has to be a scapegoat or whatever. It's, you know, sometimes it's just the way it works out. And that's the way I look at it now.
Good way to look at it. This is Calvin Trialdi with us tonight on Sports Talk New York. He has a new book out called The Arena, The True Story of One Man's Search for Excellence and the Price He Paid for Daring to Achieve It. And I've read the book, and it's certainly worth your time, folks, if you want to read it. Now, Game 7 was played after a rainout on Sunday. It was on Monday, October 27th, and John McNamara taps Bruce Hurst, who was having a great series and probably would have been the series MVP if it wasn't for the New York Mets coming back to win Game 7 as well. What's your feelings on Game 7, Calvin?
Bruce pitched exceptionally well, and I came in and got shellacked. There's no doubt about it. I didn't have my stuff, and the Mets wore me out. So, you know, it is what it is. I got shellacked.
Yeah. No bones about it. That's true. And going to go back to Game 6 for a second. I want to ask you about the Bill Buckner defensive alignment. All the way through the season, John McNamara had put in Dave Stapleton as a defensive replacement for Billy Buckner. And another point of contention is whether McNamara was going to leave Buckner in so he could relish being on the field for the Red Sox celebration. And he contends that Dave Stapleton was a liability to put in at first base. Now, the first I heard of it was on that show where you guys appeared on MLB Network, and they had tape of McNamara saying that. Have you ever heard anything about that, Calvin?
Well, the first I heard about it was sitting there in the studio listening to that. So that was both Bruce and I kind of looked at each other like, well, that's something we'd never heard before. I don't know what was running through Mac's mind on that, and so I can't really answer that. All I know is from, you know, the end of the season throughout the playoffs, there were moves made that weren't made later on. Mm-hmm. That's about all I can say about that.
Yeah. No, I get what you're talking about, sure.
Yeah.
This is what makes baseball so great. We can talk about it all winter. About Game 6, Game 7, everything like that. It gives you such food for thought. And unfortunately, some people have to come on the crap end of the stick. And Clemens, how was it playing with Roger? I mean, you went to school with Roger. It must have been good to have him on the ball club in Boston.
I always enjoyed playing with Roger. I mean, we still play golf and do all that together. So I've always enjoyed it. And, you know, there's not much a better competitor than Clem. So, you know, we're both kind of out of the same mold. So, you know, it worked out well. And then, you know, when the Red Sox traded for Spike, that brought us all three of us there.
Right. Three horns.
So that was fun.
Nice, yeah. Of course, we're talking about three University of Texas alumni there in Calvin, Roger Clemens, and Spike. I can't think.
Spike Owen.
I was going to say Spike Lee.
Spike Owen.
I got my spikes mixed up. Now, you always wanted to coach. When did that desire enter into you, Calvin, that you wanted to coach?
Probably while I was sitting in the bullpen watching games going, you know, I would do it this way, you know, critiquing what certain managers did, how they did it, and, you know, because I love the game of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm a student of the game, which might sound surprising, but you know, I study the game just sitting there in the bullpen, and so therefore, once I was done, it's like, okay, I want to do this. How do I go about it? So I have to, you know, I realize, you know, back down here, you gotta go back to school, get your degree if you want to coach in public, because the private school sector never really entered my mind. I didn't know anything about it, so I was going on the premise of public school coaching. So you have to have a degree, you have to be teaching certified. So you know, once I made the decision to that's what I wanted to do, I went back to school, got my degree, and got certified to teach. And then all of a sudden, a private school offer comes along, and I'm going, oh, okay. That's not what I had in mind, but I ended up staying there 23 years, so I guess it worked out all right.
And that, folks, is a school called St. Michael's, and the nickname, the mascot of the team, is the Crusaders. And as Calvin said, 23 years coaching that ball club left an indelible mark. Now, is there anybody along the way, Calvin, be it minors or majors, that had an influence on you, on your coaching style?
I would say the person who had the most coaching from my coaching was my high school coach. My high school coach and then Coach Gus, Coach Bouchon in high school. He was a younger guy when he came out, when he came, started coaching me in high school, but he was an assistant, a grad assistant at Texas. And when he came out, you know, he was like maybe 6 years older than us. So watching him coach and the way he coached the game, the way he approached the game, and then watching Coach Gus do it at the University of Texas, it was like, okay, you know, because his last year in high school, he won 39 games, went 39-0 in a high school season. So he knew the high school. He coached college like he coached high school, and it was very effective at the University of Texas. So I said, you know, why not
right.
pattern my way the way he does things, and you know, we're fundamentals. We do fundamentals. Fundamentals every day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the way I approached high school ball, and you know, it was pretty successful here.
What do you think of the changes in Major League Baseball, Calvin, with the pitch clock, the pizza box bases, et cetera? How do you feel about that?
As far as the pitch clock goes, I think that's more of it. It's not a pitch clock; it's a hitter's clock.
Good way to look at it.
Because the hitters are the ones that take all the time. It's not the pitchers. But the way the major league game is being played now, I'm not a fan. I like the college game. I like the high school game because they you know, they're stealing. They're still bunting. The way the game was played when I was coming up, not swinging for the fences at with two strikes, you know, putting the ball in play. They're still trying to hit home runs, and there's 15 strikeouts a game in the major league at the major league level, and that's something that I'm not used to, and I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah, I can see your point, Calvin. That definitely. But one thing, Lou Gorman, who drafted you with the Mets, I believe, he had one thing to say in the book he'd written. Between you and Roger Clemens, he said, you had the feeling that Clemens would knock down his own mother, and he didn't see that intensity. That's what we'll call it, intensity, with you, that you never had that feeling. What do you say to that, Calvin?
Well, he's got his own opinion about things.
Yeah.
So that's his opinion, and that's one man's opinion versus what I think.
Mm-hmm.
So we have differing opinions, and that's okay.
So you don't watch much Major League Baseball then, Calvin?
I tune in here and there to see how certain teams are doing and stuff. But, you know, I really enjoy college baseball. And I, you know, I coach summer baseball, so I do a travel team. And so I've got to keep up with the college game because I'm trying to get a lot of our kids. We want to get them to be able to play college baseball. So, the college scene is where I'm at right now because that's what I'm more involved with the kids that I coach during the summer.
Yeah, I agree there that you want to get these kids for a free ride if you can.
Yeah, just get them an opportunity. Get them an opportunity to play.
Get a free education is not a bad thing at all. No,
that's a great thing. That's a great thing.
Who would you say throughout the years, Calvin, was your greatest teammate?
Oh man, I would say the person I admired the most was probably Don Baylor and Dwight Evans.
Interesting. Okay.
Because Don had a way to play the game, and that's how he wanted everybody to play the game. And for some reason, I don't know if it's because he's from Austin, that he kind of took me under his wing and you know, taught me how to play, taught me how he thought the game should be played. And so I always appreciated that and respected the hell out of the man for that.
Yeah, he was a tough guy.
He was something else.
Yeah, and if folks Google Don Baylor, you see, he's got a lot of interesting merits to his record. I mean, he had a lot of base hits. He managed in the major leagues, which of course not many players do, and he did it successfully. And of course, Dwight Evans, people especially up Boston way, think that Dewey Evans should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he the way he played the game was, because him and Dwight and Don were thick as thieves at Boston, and so, you know, I would hang out with them, and you know, that was always pretty cool being a young guy and having these two older players, you know, want to help me. I appreciated the heck out of that.
That's a thrill. Yeah, I can imagine that's a thrill, Calvin, for sure. One thing I want to note. On the 25th anniversary of the 86 World Series, Keith Olbermann, he wrote of Calvin's graceful demeanor and his work with young players that Schiraldi has had an impact that merely getting the last out of that World Series could have never afforded him. And I thought that was a fitting way to close, Calvin, and just a great quotation.
That is very, very special. I hadn't heard that, to tell you the truth.
Oh, okay. That's great. Yeah.
And I appreciate him for saying that. And man, that kind of hits to the heart.
Yeah, as well it should, because basically what he's saying is, winning the World Series could never be as big a thrill or have the impact on other people. As Jackie Robinson always cited, a life is only a life in the way it touches other people, that Calvin touched people in a way that winning the World Series could never have afforded him. And that's the way I wanted to end, Calvin, because, like I said, tremendous quote from Keith Olbermann.
Thank you very much.
That's it.
I appreciate it.
And so what keeps you busy these days, Calvin, if you're not with St. Michael's anymore?
Well, I'm back into coaching a little bit in high school, but I still do travel ball in the summer. So that keeps me busy, that and doing stuff around the house, and got two grandkids and one more on the way. So
nice. Yeah.
They're a handful.
Yeah, well, there's nothing like grandkids, Calvin. That is for
sure.
It's
awesome.
So
it is awesome.
I wish the best to you and Deborah and the rest of the family. It's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight. Folks, I want to remind you, the book is called The Arena by Calvin Schiraldi, the true story of one man's search for excellence and the price he paid for daring to achieve it. Check that out. Where can people find that on Amazon, Calvin?
No, it's not on Amazon. It's you can get it at thearenabook.com.
Thearenabook.com, all one word, folks. Check that out.
Yes.
You'll be glad you did. It's really a heartwarming story, and one that is definitely worth telling. And I said, Calvin, thanks for being with us up here on Long Island. It's been a pleasure. I wish the best of luck to you and the family, and thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Appreciate it, and anytime.
That is Calvin Giraldi, folks. So that'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk New York. I'd like to thank my guests, as always, Terry Collins and Calvin Giraldi. We really had some great fun and some great talk on Sports Talk New York tonight. And my engineer, Brian Graves, as always, thank you for the hard work you do on behalf of the show. And, of course, you guys. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again on April 7th, next time I'll be in this chair. Till then, be safe and be well. Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.